I mean, I haven't ever kind of put on a station over here where I kind of would have been, well, not a commercial station, where I would have been expecting to hear one of our songs, because obviously it is really formatted, but in a way it's really good, because there is like a lot of really good music on the radio over here. You can listen to your classic oldies, or you can listen, you know, you can listen to a station that's just playing R&B all day, or, you know, a station that's playing gospel all day or whatever, which you wouldn't get at home.
Yeah, we definitely do have formats here.
But, I mean, on the other hand, we've been really lucky as well in that we have had so much support of college radio right from the start here, because there's really not a parallel to that at home, where there is...
We were talking about that, actually, yeah, that there isn't an equivalent to any great extent to what we have here.
No, I mean, there's pirate stations and stuff, but they tend to play, you know, it's all kind of underground dance music and stuff, and... unless you do kind of make the breakthrough onto Radio 1 or Radio 2, which now plays a lot of kind of new stuff as well, and unless you do that, then there's kind of no kind of...
There's no outlet for the music over there, yeah.
There's no outlet for any kind of alternative music unless it is kind of underground dance music. So, I would say I wouldn't say that we do fit in with commercial radio over here, but college radio is such a big thing that it doesn't
and
really...
It's fine.
Yeah, it doesn't, I wouldn't
That's
say.
That's why I'm where I am at this moment in time, because, you know, to get the freedom. So, tell me about, you do other things that a lot of bands don't do, like the liner notes of your album, the kind of the long stories that go along with it, that are kind of... You know, here I am, and here's what's going on, and all of that. So, you know, people with Belle and Sebastian not only get the music, but they kind of also get a pretty major glimpse into life, you know, in Belle and Sebastian land.
Well, yeah, I mean, maybe more a glimpse into, you know, Stuart's what's in Stuart's head. You know, it's there's been liner notes which. Yeah, I've not, you know, as even as someone in the band, I've got, you know, it, you know, can't even get my head around personally. I'm even in the band.
Pretty wild.
You know, I'm in the band, you know, but they're, it's just something extra. I honestly don't know about insight to us personally, but the last one on Dear Catastrophe Waitress, you know, is probably the one that rings true of, mainly because it's, you know, it's an actual diary entry. Kind of stream of consciousness kind of thing, you know. So that was probably the one that ringed truest, even though none of us are in it, you know. It's just talking about Glasgow.
So let's get off music for a little while. What, because the other thing that is very interesting to me about Belle and Sebastian is kind of, you know, not only obviously that you worked on storytelling with, you know, Todd and all that, but you're kind of a very cinematic band, both in your, you know, in the music and the lyrics and everything, but also just, I know you're huge fans of films. So what have you seen lately, and what have you liked? What have you seen anything really good? Or watched anything old that's going to affect kind of what's coming next?
Well, personally, you know, the last couple of years I've become, you know, very into Ingmar Bergman, Swedish film director. There's actually a parallel with music. It's a bit like, you know, when you're a kid and you get into a band that that I've made a lot of records. It's like getting into the Rolling Stones or something. I've got a huge back catalogue, and you get that excited, and you're working your way through them, all the albums, and it's a bit like that, you know. And I've been enjoying those very much. And I saw recently Starsky and Hutch.
There you go.
And which I really enjoyed.
Did you have the TV series when you were young over there?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It was big, right?
Oh, massive, you know. I watched it as a wee boy. So, I mean, I don't know. I mean, I really got all the references and the in-jokes, you know. I'm really, really upset, really enjoyed it. And I saw the Kill Bill movies, and I really enjoyed that as well.
Yeah, the second one was very cool.
Yeah.
The second one tied up the story there.
Don't give too much away. I've not seen the second one yet.
We won't tell you anything. It's got a happy ending.
Yeah, no, I'm looking forward
to it. That's a happy ending.
I'm really looking forward to seeing it. Because we were watching a few, like, original Kung Fu movies on the last trip as well, like on the bus. Murray, that plays fiddle, he's actually studying Kung Fu as well, and he had some of the pure old, not really old ones, but the kind of, they were kind of like late 80s ones, weren't they? But they're kind of the first ones with really sort of spectacular fight scenes in the kind of sort of Matrix style, like pan arounds during the fight scenes and stuff like that.
Well, I saw one that Murray had and it was brilliant. Was it Iron Monkey?
Iron Monkey, yeah. And there was the Legend of Red Dragon as well, which was really good.
It's wild, the storytelling they do there, isn't it?
Oh, it's just the best, you know. I thought Iron Monkey was one of the best movies I'd ever seen.
I'm going to have to go out and rent Iron Monkey.
Yeah.
So the music director of the station's pretty interesting. He turned around when your new album came in and he said, you know, gosh, I want to hear more of the Left Bank. And I happen to have had a Best of the Left Bank, and he went kind of wild for that. But, you know, the influences question is kind of interesting because, you know, you refer to so many, you know, influences. But what would you like me, you mentioned, you know, what I could play with Step Into My Office, Baby, but if you had your choice of other music, you know, to be surrounded by as I'm playing your music, what, you know, new or old, what would you like to be surrounded by? If you could have, like, your dream Bell and Sebastian sandwich and what am I going to put around it kind of thing, what would you have me do? And you can go any place you want to, and I know I can probably find it.
Well, I think it'd be a pretty varied sandwich. What do you think, Beans? What would you like?
Yeah, God, I don't know, it's quite a hard question. Yeah. You know, like,
well, while you're thinking, I just thought of one. You know, if you know, music that has parallels with track 3, I think, is called If She Wants Me.
Right.
And I always kind of saw that one as a kind of, having a sort of that kind of quite golden, kind of 70s glossy sort of disco-y sound, like maybe a bit gambling half, a bit like
I've always loved My Mama
Well, I mean, maybe more specific, or Rock Your Baby by George McRae.
I played that a few weeks ago.
Yeah,
I love
or
that track.
We started off the arrangement, we started off with a copy of Philadelphia Freedom by Elton John.
There you go.
And we're listening to some of those kind of Gene Page kind of arrangements, which are really spectacular. And, what's that other gambling half tune? That kind of...
Three Degrees?
Yeah, 74, 75, you know, Do the Hustle, Van McCoy.
There you go.
That kind of era, that kind of pre-punk disco.
Teddy Pendergrass, the OJs. Yeah. I guess, similarly, William Devon, Be Thankful for What You
what
Got.
You got.
I mean, that's totally...
It's all great stuff. What an era that was. That was kind of... You see, that wasn't disco, though. That was definitely that Philadelphia horn sound. It was when I started playing in clubs, we played that. We played Rock Your Baby as disco.
Uh-huh.
We definitely did.
It was different. Not in the disco sucks kind of way, you know.
Right.
But disco was a... I think disco was a... Yeah, it was a movement before the Saturday Night Fever or something, wasn't it? You know?
Yeah. Oh, no, that was a whole different... But that was just prior.
Records were the hi-hat goes...
Right. Well, that was nice. That was like 74, and the disco didn't really hit until about a year...
Yeah.
About a year later.
Yeah, it's just out of definitions, I guess. I always think, you know, some people consider Rock Your Baby as the first disco record, even though it's probably, you know, there's plenty before that I've got that kind of swinging beat, you know.
Yeah, there were a few others, because I was actually working in a club exactly when that stuff just started. I was like 14 years old, that's when I started DJing, and that's exactly when that stuff just started to
It's a great era. I'm just trying to go through the songs and on the album and see if there's anything.
What would I play with I'm a Cuckoo?
Oh, you'd play probably Thin Lizzy.
There you go.
You know, I would say. That was quite an obvious one. Maybe for Sarah's tune. I think I remember when we were practicing Sarah's tune, Asleep in a Sunbeam, there was something in the kind of groove of it that it reminded me of Mary in the Morning by Elvis. It's on That's the Way It Is album.
Well, it's interesting because what I wrote, it's funny I didn't ask the question, but I said Sleep in a Sundream sounds like it belongs in the British Invasion, sung by Marianne Faithfull.
Oh, that's quite good as well. I think, you know, part of it, you know, you know, I think Sarah said also, you know, make it, you know, I said, well, I did the guitar, and she went, Johnny Marr, you know, and, and you know, I think also wanted it to have a sort of, it didn't quite come across in the record, but, you know, a kind of, maybe kind of September Girls, kind of downward stroke, kind of, in many ways, that's a kind of British Invasion sort of sound.
Well, I think the joyful thing for me is that you do, unlike, you know, we always joke around that 30 or 40 CDs come in a week, and we listen to them, and you listen to the first five bars of the CD, and you go, and you know exactly what's to come, and that goes in the, you know, you don't want to contribute it back to the environment, so you're going to sell it to the used record store pile. And the fact of the matter is that when a Belle and Sebastian record comes in, you kind of, and you probably don't intend it, it's just what you do, but you're kind of forced to listen. You know, the beginning of Step Into My Office, Baby, the first few bars of it, you have no idea what it's going to be. And as a result of that, you kind of have to listen.
Oh, that's good. You know, I mean, I don't know.
I mean, you probably don't see it that way, but it's kind of a joyful experience not to turn on a record and have a thrashing guitar come right at you, but to have, you know, good old-fashioned melody and instrumentation, and, you know, use the word arrangement. I don't think half of the rock bands that are out there today would, if you said the word arrangement, they'd say, oh, is that where you put the chairs, you know, when we...
I find most guitar music, you know, incredibly dull and incredibly boring, and I guess if we try and do anything, it's just try not to be boring or just try and...
Well, also, you're emulating what you love, what you really like.
Obviously we'd love to we'd love to do go beyond emulating, you know, but
right,
you know, we're still trying, you know. I think that record was Dear Catastrophe Waitress, certainly, you know, it digs a bit deeper into what we're maybe capable of, but you know, it's still not enough, you know. I think there's still a lot of...
Well, that's a nice attitude. That's a great attitude to have, though.
Yeah, sorry, just Stevie mentioning the title there just reminded me a good... if you're looking for things to play alongside things off the album, you should play next to the title track, you should play a tune by a guy called Ananda Shankar, who was like Ravi Shankar's nephew, and made these albums of kind of fusion of Western and Indian music. There's a tune off a tune called Charging Tiger off an album called Sagre Mashan, which was kind of a bit of an inspiration for the arrangement of the title track.
I'm learning more. This is going to make for an interesting set. We'll have to send you a copy of it. So the obvious question, what's next? Because you said you're kind of at the, even though I think here in America we're still very much on... You know, I'm a Cuckoo, has it even been, I don't even know if it's been released here yet as a single, so to speak.
I'm not sure, because I think the label over here kind of wanted to put Stay Loose out to the radio. So I think it went out as a promo, it didn't get released as a single, but I think they wanted to have a go with that. I think they thought that was the tune on the record that could do best on the radio. So I think that's kind of put the kind of single release schedule out of sync with what's happening at home.
But I did notice that you are heading back home for some, you know, big festivals and some other things that are going on. So what is there a plan to come into the studio like in the fall or something and get on to the next phase?
Mm. Yeah, I mean it's not really been discussed as yet. I think, you know, probably we're all sort of
you want to take a break too.
We've just been really busy. You know, we've been working on tunes, for EPs and stuff off the album. I mean, we got one that's really pretty interesting called Your Cover's Blown, and you know, that'll come out on a record maybe in the summer. Well, I don't know, as Chris said, maybe America's out of sync, but it's certainly be out in Britain in the summer, and that was an interesting tune. You know, it's really good. And maybe a step into something slightly different.
Well, terrific. I think there's going to be some pretty interesting sets surrounding this interview. So thank you for doing it.